You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Hi, I want to open this Keep It episode with just a quick little conversation. I know some of you saw me this weekend at the Dallas Cowboys game. Uh-huh. And I just want you all to know that I was sitting next to George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm. But you were cheerleading, which was so bizarre.
I was cheerleading, I was sitting, and listen, he and I are friends.
Sure.
Okay? We're cool. So don't be mad at me.
What do you have in common? List the things.
I hate gay people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Do not want those faggots to get married.
Right.
Sure. At all. Sure.
Love missiles.
Missiles?
Yeah. Love Karl Rove.
Mm.
Love the Southern strategy. Always love bringing that back.
What's the Southern strategy? Can you describe it?
You know, you're just like making white people think that black people are going to murder them in their homes.
Mm. Oh, okay. You love that.
Yeah, love that.
This
anyway.
Whole Ellen thing was, I haven't been so disappointed since I learned Sandra Bernhard was best friends with Manuel Noriega. I mean, it's just very disappointing. I thought I knew her.
Were you disappointed?
With Ellen?
Yes.
I think George W. Bush has been on the show before.
Yes.
So I wasn't, I guess, surprised. And also, like, Michelle Obama's friends with him. I guess I thought her explanation about the whole thing was a little bit more mamby-pamby than I wanted.
Oh, it was dumb.
Yeah.
It was very dumb.
Mamby Pamby.
By the way,
I'm 175 years old.
Also,
honestly,
coming
to the stage, Mamby Pamby.
That is Matt Rogers'
Hi,
voice.
How are you guys?
You're back.
I am back. This is my second appearance on Keep It.
Well, Matt, the first time you were a
esteemed guest.
Yes.
To discuss The View.
Yeah.
And already I'm here and it's daytime TV talk show host discussion. It's my energy. I actually manifested Ellen fucking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't surprised because remember her Kevin Hart apology
Correct.
Tour.
Yes.
Who could forget? And who could ever be surprised whenever Ellen does shit like this?
Yeah. I just found the mamby-pamby, I guess. It was very silly to explain the fact that you're rich and it doesn't give a fuck who you hang out with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With, I'm kind. And I wish that we had more kindness in the world.
And also the whole,
so
we're
stupid.
Just two people on opposite sides of a divide. It's like, no, he was the president during that time, an extremely overtly homophobic president, for one thing. And also, the wars situation I found problematic. I know I'm unusual in that way.
There is, the words blood on his hands have been used.
Right.
And we could use them again and again going forward. There was a time, I think people would just forget because of the shitstorm we're in now, but there was a time when he was truly the bane of everyone's existence.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, he paints.
No, and he's my least favorite painter other than Jim Carrey.
Honestly, Jim Carrey, that's not his skill.
Right. No, there was also clapping in her audience, too, because I think...
Ugh, they're at gunpoint.
I mean, true. You will clap and you will dance to
they
Justin Timberlake.
They and she are at gunpoint doing Can't Stop the Feeling every time at the top of her episode. She is so mad that she set that for herself for the rest of her goddamn life.
No, because there just also is this certain kind of person, right, who believes that, yes, political beliefs, you're different side of the aisle.
Sure.
You can be nice to everyone, no matter if the person is voting to take away your rights or actually doing it. Mm. You know, it's what came up in the 2016 election.
Mm. And she was rage shaming. That's what she was.
Yes, right, because she also said, you know, people were mad, and you know what they do when they're mad? They tweet.
Yeah, she. This is a narrative for her.
Yeah.
Which is exclusively like a rich, wealthy, white woman thing. And rich, wealthy, white, straight, or not even straight. Well, Ellen's straight. I mean, we should say that off the top.
Yes.
For all intents and purposes.
Man-loving Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres is a straight woman, and she operates, as a straight man, to be honest with you.
When she says Portia, you know, they think, like, who? Her sister?
Yeah, no. Portia is a man's wife. Portia is the name of a man's wife.
Just as Shakespeare intended, yes.
Yeah. Lady Macbeth.
Right.
Yes. Indeed.
Blood on the hands.
See, oh, it?
Honey, it's all coming back around.
I mean, I could launch,
I love your
I could launch
degree.
Into that right now. Unsex me right now.
Oh. Is that's what, not is that it. What she said?
It's unsex me now.
Right now? Unsex me right now. The Ira Madison version.
Sir, unsex me. Yeah.
That
please.
That is the Mitski remix. Yeah. Okay.
To
anyway.
Keep it or not to keep it?
Yeah. Anyway, Ellen, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't care about her.
Mr. Wrong still slaps.
Well, you know what? This is a movie from that era, but she is not in it. But I will attribute it to her and her energy. Remember Dunstan Checks In?
Oh, duh.
Yes.
Yeah. With Faye Dunaway?
With Miss Faye.
Yes.
The monkey?
Yeah. That movie has Ellen DeGeneres energy for me.
Just in terms
How's
of like
so?
Floppy, farcical,
yeah,
she was around.
There's like a monkey in it that does like a lot of like work. I feel like that's like very, Ellen has very like, we're going to have animals on the show energy.
Yes, uh-huh. Yes.
And there's an animal in that film.
Very, very, I believe Ellen has bought a zoo.
Yeah.
Anyway, what a show we have today.
I guess.
I mean, we started off with Ellen, and we have more clownery to talk about.
Yep, yep.
Wow, Joker. That was good, Ira.
Thank you, thank you. I'm good with transitions.
Buffoonery, clownery.
We're going to talk about Joker today.
And I hope our listeners are incredibly proud of me for going to see this film, because guess what? I would not have seen it otherwise, spoiler.
Never in my life
to be
would
fair,
I have paid a
you
cent.
You saw it before me.
I mean, I saw it this weekend.
Yes. You were like, I hope we're talking about the Joker, because I've seen it.
Well, I'm very proud of this job and doing the work well, so I went and submitted myself to the Century City Mall early.
Oh, Century City.
Oh, we just went shopping there.
I went back. You know.
I almost wore the shirt that I bought that day here today, but now I realize it's a little small, and we have to talk about how we help each other shop.
Oh, yeah. No, Matt Rogers and I wear the same silhouette.
We wear the same silhouette.
And we're the same size, basically.
Yeah.
So we fought over a turtleneck sweater, and frankly, I won it, because well, I am a member of Kraftwerk, and he is not.
I'm saving my arguments for this podcast with you. So.
All right, Shiv, fighting over turtlenecks. Joker, and then we're going to talk about best songs of the 2010s.
I love this.
Just because Pitchfork has made us all talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I really feel bad for people who don't like ranking things. It is so satisfying to
it's
me.
It's very good.
I know, just people being mad online all week. How dare you leave out Nicki Minaj's Roman Reloaded, the remix, part two. 3,500.
The re-Roman.
Part 2, 3,500.
And we have a guest today.
Ugh.
Yes.
The guest could break my arm, frankly.
Joe Manganiello
yeah.
will be here in the studio.
I expect when he comes in, we will start making... Do you remember... On Family Matters in the 90s when Stefan Urkel would appear and then
yes.
everybody would whoop for an hour.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what's going to happen.
Yeah, yes. yeah, yeah. It's gonna
I was
be that.
I was thinking Christina Applegate walking into the room on Married with Children.
Yes, every time.
Ow,
yeah.
ow, ow. She's nine. She's deeply a preteen at best. And you're like, fuck yeah! Like, literally, they stopped all short but of like, a man screaming, I will fuck her. Like, it's crazy psycho.
That's what they scream when Ellen comes out.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
It's edited out.
We'll be right back. Keep It is brought to you by Hinge. Hinge is the dating app designed to be deleted.
If you're really good at it, that is. I've actually met several really good friends through Hinge. I've used it, I can't believe this, over a decade now. Woof, what a life I've had.
Well, you know what they've added within a decade of us being on Hinge is their new LGBTQIA+ prompts, which are designed to help queer daters better connect based on similarities, interests, and compatibility.
Hinge prompts helps you show off your full personality and connect with someone who appreciates you. Plus, these prompts were created in collaboration with GLAAD, so they are by the people, for the people. Some of the prompts are, the first time I knew I was gay was, I was literally in the act of being gay, like hooking up with somebody when I admitted it. Denial is strong and hard in the Catholic Midwest.
Mine was Tom Cruise's Vanity Fair cover. The shirtless one?
You just turned to an imaginary camera and said, I'm gay.
Yeah. Or broke the fourth wall.
You're like Fleabag. Other prompts include, I feel proudest of who I am when, it feels affirming when others, blank, I connect to my community by, I wish I could tell the younger version of myself. I'm going to say, whenever I watch that in a drag race semifinal, when they're like, if I could talk to my younger self, I would say, I would be like, girl, get tighter clothes. I mean, what's going on with what you're wearing? You look like you're in the X Games. Other prompts include, my chosen family is the best at, and gender euphoria looks like. Download Hinge and show off your full self using their LGBTQIA plus prompts today. Then find someone worth deleting the app for.
Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of blackness from NPR and how I live my life every day.
Oh, I'm glad to bear witness to it.
Each of NPR's black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of a struggle.
It sounds like you at Coachella. I'm already tuned in. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be black today, told from a unique black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths.
Black perspectives have always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcasts that center Black voices. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as very nuanced and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us.
Doesn't the Black experience sound like a three-disc Prince album we never got? Someone check the vault, please. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts.
Last week, Warner Brothers released the highly anticipated film Joker. That may be a stretch, but it allowed people to actually see the film before forming an opinion about it. I've waited for us to discuss this on the show with all of the pre-controversy surrounding it, you know, from its Venice Film Festival, Golden Lion, round of applause,
that is
standing ovation.
It's the oddest thing in the world. Once you've seen it, it's so weird to think it won
that. I mean, but people also gave like a standing ovation to Birth of a Nation.
Oh, you can't trust any film festival.
No.
No, they're all paid off. Like I become...
Especially the foreign ones.
Yeah, right. No, everybody's performing and everybody wants to be written up in some article. We talked about this with Kyle Buchanan before.
Yeah. And then there are also the controversies with director Todd Haynes. I'm kidding.
That was very shocking to hear those words.
Yeah. Todd Haynes' Joker is actually worse. worse than this. More problematic.
Yes.
But you get to see a woman think in it.
That's true.
One-sided nemesis, Sasha Stone, in her initial review of Joker mentioned Todd Haynes instead of
you don't
Todd
say
Phillips.
She made a massive error on her website
without spell check,
girl.
Anyway, Todd Phillips had a lot of things to say about PC culture. The movie is maybe inspiring incels, Joker copycats, there's mass shooting fears. So let's just get into all of that first.
Have people called this movie Inception yet? Because that's what it is. See, it's like Christopher Nolan, but incels.
Oh,
this is how jokes
it is. That. It did. I did have the same anxiety the whole time as I watched.
So, obviously, you two hated the movie.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't say hate it.
Well, it's interesting.
I didn't hate it.
My thing about the movie is, for 80% of the runtime, it's not really about the Joker lore you're familiar with. But it basically counts on you having a connection with that character anyway. Because for the most part, the movie is, here's a person who is obviously crazy. He also was crazy, and now he's getting driven crazy. That, like, in a way, there's no drama to it.
Mm.
You know, it's like statically, bad things keep happening to him. It keeps being the Price is Right loser horns for 100 minutes.
It's a pile-on the whole time.
Yeah.
It's kind of, like, porny in that way. It's kind of just like, it's getting so bad, there's nothing. I will say, really tried to, like, tackle economic disparity in a way, I think, that felt real to now. Like, that same anger and that same kind of hopelessness was very present throughout the movie, and I also think it did a good job of showing what it's like when you have low income combined with mental illness. I think that that's something that's happening out there, and therefore, like, just to start positive, I really liked that it attempted to survey that. However, it's toxic. The movie is toxic.
Yes.
I liked the stuff that you just mentioned there. You know, like, I liked the mental health struggle. I like the, you know, the part where the funding gets cut for his government program.
Tight screenplay.
You know, that works. Weirdly, the stuff surrounding it doesn't work for me because the movie is, so the movie is set in Gotham in, like, some distant past. It's supposed to evoke, like, late 70s, 80s New York City. And so the movie is weirdly, to me, racialized in a way that the movie never addresses. You know, his doctors are both black women. So many of the service workers around are black people. The attacks that sort of happen, specifically the subway one, right? It's supposed to echo Bernard Goetz and his shooting of three people who attacked him in the subway. But those people weren't white, you know? And it tries to toe this line of kill the rich, you know? Kill, like, the Donald Trumps, like, the people who are making money and, like, letting poor people lose access to healthcare and et cetera. But it also wants to be both sides of the coin.
A part of the movie is a little bit, incels have a point.
Yeah, yes. That's literally it. I mean, it's humanizing how terror... I mean, he becomes a terrorist.
Yeah.
And so basically everything up to that point is just like, don't you understand how he became a terrorist? And it's like, wait, hold on a second. I just feel like I sat down to watch this movie and I didn't think it was bad, per se. Like, I think there were some great scenes. I think that there was obviously an amazing central performance. But you have to ask yourself the question.
The cinematography's great.
I mean, it's a well-made movie.
Right,
but you have to ask, when you're watching this stuff like this, like, who asked for this? And when you answer that question, who asked for this, the answer is really fucking scary, I think.
Yeah, right.
Because you cannot sit here and tell me that someone watching this movie, someone out there, is not watching this movie and being like, you know what? This movie is right. I feel like this. And at the end of it, like, they do sort of glorify him in a way.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying, like, you're responsible for everything, but, like, you are responsible for the art that you create. And I'm wondering if, like, we needed this. Did we need this? Seriously? And then I'm reading articles where it's like, well, we thought it was a good thing to do because there wasn't a solidified version of the Joker story. It's like, bitch, we have seen several versions of this Joker story again and again and again. Like,
well,
and
so
we've seen the definitive performance of this character, I feel.
From Heath Ledger.
Yes.
Yes.
Cesar Romero.
We didn't need this.
Well, so I would actually counter to that is in the Vanity Fair profile of Joaquin Phoenix, there are quotes from Todd Phillips, story director of Road Trip, Hangover,
artist,
War Dogs.
Auteur.
I'm not going to drag him too much for those past movies, because I actually think Road Trip and Hangover are very funny.
They're fun.
The peak of the Tom Green
Hangover
revolution.
Hangover 2 and 3 are garbage. And I didn't mind War Dogs, to be honest. But I will say that his quotes were basically the fact that he left comedy because he felt like comedy was getting too woke,
this
right?
So
like,
annoying.
He couldn't make his frat bro movies that he used to make in the 2000s. And so he was like, how can I still do something that's, like, unexpected and crazy, but I can't do it in comedy? So he shifted to dramas. And he wanted to do The Joker, but this wasn't born out of any sort of, I want to do a definitive origin of The Joker. It felt a lot like Julie Taymor's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. It was someone who wanted to tell a story evocative of Martin Scorsese films, like, you know, this is basically the king of comedy.
It gets to
mixed
there a little
with
bit.
Taxi Driver.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciated those references.
Yes,
but I would say it was more radicalized The Waterboy.
Yes, but it's echoing those because that's clearly, and Joaquin Phoenix in Vanity Fair talks about those are his favorite movies, right?
Yeah,
that these two artists wanted to create something like that, and The Joker was just an easy avenue for them to do it.
Sure.
Todd Phillips is like, Warner Brothers, let me take this character and do this. I compared it to Julie Taymor because Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, when you see that, it has nothing to fucking do with Spider-Man.
No.
It went through so many fucking rewrites because this heifer was interested in, like, I want to tell a story about, like, Arachne and Greek theater, and I'll just use Spider-Man to do it. So it's reasons that really turned me off in the film are the fact that it wasn't someone who seemed at all interested in the Joker mythos, and it seemed like he wasn't even into comic books in general.
Also, I would say, like, when the movie starts, you're not sure how much it's actually going to intersect with what you know about the Joker, and it does actually go there eventually.
Unfortunately,
yeah,
I do not need to see Batman's fucking origin story.
Yeah,
again.
A child watching
pearls,
that
pearls cascading in the air.
Truly, nothing visually different
for 50 years.
Nothing visually different about, and it's almost weird when this movie intersects with the sort of Batman like mythos or whatever. Mm-hmm. The movie feels tonally very weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you see the Wayne house, and even like the way that Bruce Wayne is styled in the movie as a child, and like the pearls of it all, it's like this feels now like comic book universe, and it's very disparate, and maybe that was on purpose.
It almost
feels shoehorned in, like
by Warner Brothers. It seems like they were like,
there was a test screening where it's like, well, we need to see young Batman looking concerned. How do we know he's a human being if he doesn't see a murder?
Right.
Also, how old is Joaquin Phoenix supposed to be?
Yeah.
I'm like,
literally in life.
I'm like, because.
In life, what? How old are you supposed to be, sir?
Because does that mean that Batman grows up and is fighting a 70-year-old Joker at some point?
Because he should beat him at that point.
Yes.
Truly, though, if we get one more slow shot of a man who's too thin, hunched over before a locker, like trying to do something, and you see his back spasm, like this, some shots of this, I was just like, okay, we get it, we understand.
Right, so that's the other very annoying thing about the narrative behind this film. Aside from the violence and, like, is it bad that we're making a film like this, I don't need another award cycle of Joaquin Phoenix pulling a fucking Leonardo DiCaprio from Revenant.
I don't need
constant interviews of him talking about losing weight for this role.
No.
They're aiming for it.
I personally think that performance is a list of kind of Oscar-related cliches and also horror villain or classic movie villain cliches. First of all, the weight loss, which is we're Dallas Buyers Clubbing all over again.
Mm.
Another movie about gays and clubs, Dallas Buyers Club. but also, like, a lot of his acting is like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. The mother, he's always talking about mother like Norman Bates from Psycho. Mm. To me, it just is like he's twisted in all the ways everybody is usually twisted.
Expected.
I'm not saying he's not committed to those things, but in a way, I would be very surprised if somebody watched that movie and didn't immediately think of six other movies with a character exactly like that.
Right, and tonally, it wanted to be this bigger, fun, dramatic story, but it just wasn't, you know? And it's like, is it mental illness? Is it abuse? Is it society attacking
him?
It does not know what it wants to be. And I think that that's why I was just sort of like flippant about the whole idea that this movie is dangerous.
Mm.
I just don't think it's interesting enough to be dangerous. And I think that when that shooting sort of happened with The Dark Knight, I don't think people had even been able to really see The Dark Knight yet for that to happen. You know, I think the person doing that was maybe because of some sort of fixation on Batman, but it was like mostly just like, here is a place where people are concentrated, you know? I think that this is so, in the media, been discussed and calculated and like just sort of fanficked into being a repeat of that, that I just didn't see it happening. You know, I felt like reporters more wanted it to happen in some like sick sort of like Thomas Swift way. It was like, oh, we will make sure something like this happens so then we have something to write about, rather than anyone actually being attacked at the movie.
I would agree with you that the media has exploded it. However, I don't think people out there are going to need it to be as interesting as you for it to cause them to think and do certain things.
Of course, but you can also get shot up at
100%, Ira. Of course, 100%. But it's just like,
watch me. What kind of comment is that?
Want to bet?
Well, I just think that the current climate that we're in with regards to mass shootings has shifted from even what they were during Dark Knight era. You know,
you don't
need a film like this to inspire it. I don't know. It probably just seems old hat to me. Like I'm not afraid of being shot at a movie like that. You know, I'm afraid of being shot at work.
I hear you. My biggest problem with this movie is not like I was scared to go see it. You know what I mean? I think my issue with the whole really, if I can boil down what
there
my issue is...
There are mostly black people in my audience, too, so I was not afraid of being shot.
You need to look no further than what he is saying in the media right now, Todd Phillips. So he says things like, you know, you try to do comedy and you can't these days. And it is like at the climax of this movie, he turns to Robert De Niro, who plays a talk show host, and he says, he starts to go off about how, like, you all decide what comedy is, and comedy is subjective. So there is something at the heart of this that is very angry at the state of the world right now and PC
and culture. Retaliatory. Yeah. And it's a retaliatory thing.
And and so the way I feel about it is, if you're out there saying shit like this, like, we're too woke, PC culture is killing comedy, etc., what you are saying, literally what you're saying, is you miss a time when minorities were silent. You miss a time when you didn't have to know what every letter in LGBTQ plus meant. You miss a time when you were the only person occupying space. And so this is like a movie that is born out of like, yeah, fuck this. We're going to do whatever the fuck we want. And it's just like, I resent that attitude, because what you're saying is you miss a time when everyone except you was erased. That's
right.
Literally what you were saying. I'm sorry if you don't like hearing that, but you're stomping your feet over there, and this is what you're saying, and this is what we hear.
Right. You hate not being insulated from a conversation that has always been occurring. That is that.
It's always weird hearing that, just because there are obviously plenty of things that are still really fucking funny, and there are also
great,
and there are also things from that era that are still funny. I mean, I mention it all the time. If people were really destroying offensive joke institutions, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia would not still be on the air,
right?
And I think that that show every year, they have clunkers now because it's been on for like 50 years, but. There still manages to be like really funny episodes of that
There's
show.
Ribald, and, weird, hilarious comedy everywhere.
Yes, you know? And I think that's just a show that's in that sort of genre that Todd Phillips was sort of talking about. But it's managed to evolve over the years. And I think that comedy, too, just, it evolves. You know?
Yeah.
We're not laughing at episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter in 2019.
Right.
So... move on.
Sometimes I am confronted with the fact that 500 years from now, the comedy that will hold up will be Jackass and not like anything we've put a lot of social commentary into. I worry about that. I will say that. But by the way, something else that goes unsaid about this movie is you talked about how it's like the King of Comedy and Taxi Driver. And as the movie comes to its climax, those two movies come up.
I mean,
and
Robert De Niro
way.
Even plays
correct.
The opposite.
That's
he plays the
character.
Jerry Lewis role, which he played in King of Comedy. But also, the ending to me borrows heavily from Network, too.
Mm.
And I think that's something that really, like, stifles the impact of the movie to me is I feel just like all of the elements from this movie are borrowed. And the final moment of the movie is this weird incel POD Youth of a Nation moment.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of uprising
feeling. Well, it also has like three different endings.
Yeah. Oh, including that what looks like an epilogue.
Yeah, I was going to call it an epilogue. I don't know if we needed that. And also, I thought it was kind of unclear the way that ended.
Right. It was clear that other murder happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
Though that's sad.
Yeah, which is that, well, you know, black women got what they got.
And
in
that's,
this movie.
I guess that's another thing, is it's like, you do say something when like, I don't know, that the whole end of that movie, I was like, this movie is ugly, man.
Well, talking about the borrowing, this as a drama felt very borrowed and pastiched and not in a good way like Tom Stoppard does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was someone who has a lot of favorite movies from a specific genre and then was just duplicating them. And it doesn't seem like he has anything to say as a dramatist.
Yeah. Well, also, it's only a humanized argument if you dehumanize everybody he's up against. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is the main problem with this movie. All it does is humanize this one character by dehumanizing everybody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is just terrible to him. Like, they have nothing to say about these other people, no perspective on those people.
Specifically, there's a scene with him and his therapist, a black woman, where he's like, I don't think you're listening to me. You've never listened to me. Of course she's not fucking listening to you, because she's probably got shit that she's dealing with too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just like, it ignores what everyone in society is probably going through to make you all be on the journey of this white man.
Yeah, who prefers to be the loudest about what's happening to him. Yes.
Right.
Also, by the way...
And no one is actually ever really caring to him in the film.
No. No, no, no.
He also, has his mother, and then what they do with that character is like you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, Frances Conroy is really good, though.
She's great. I mean, Frances Conroy is great, and we love whenever it's a C beats books.
By the way, this reminded me of another movie. I don't mean to harp on this.
Ordinary People. No.
Do you see the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Of course.
Where it's so silly, the concept of this movie. The only way they can heighten it is by making the city the most disgusting thing you've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I kept thinking, you are making this world so gross because there's not enough content in here to justify how bleak this is.
Every room is filthy.
Right.
Every room in this film has filth all over the walls. There's books and papers stacked everywhere. I'm like, what are all these papers, bitch?
Which, conversely, the reason why Secret of the Ooze is so good is because it leans into camp and the comedy in the situation.
And into Vanilla Ice, yes.
Yes. I mean, just the opening of Secret of the Ooze with the... with the pizza delivery guy delivering a pizza to the sewer.
Right.
Like, it sets up a completely different tone from the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes, but we don't get Judith Hogue as April O'Neil. Do you know how old she was in that movie? 22. Anyway, back in those days, everybody was, like, 41 by default.
Yeah, truly.
I mean, was confused.
I mean, isn't that just, like, Keira Knightley being, like, basically 13 in Love Actually?
Yeah, right.
She's still 13 to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
She's actually stayed 13.
But in the 19th century.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Atonement too. Still atoning.
Still atoning.
Anyway, I would hope that Joker would inspire, if anything, other studios, since it made so much fucking money, to just maybe just go balls out with more superhero films. You know, like, if you let other directors do
I think they're
going to
do it. Do not worry about that.
But
if I want a dark comic, I'll read Fun Home. I've said it before.
If I want a dark comic, I'll watch Anthony Jeselnik. That was fucking bad. Edit that out.
If I want a dark comic, I'll watch Wanda Sykes' new special on Netflix. Because she's black.
Of course, yeah.
Dark.
Yeah, gotcha.
Monster in law.
Anyway, we'll be right back.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
We are back with Joe Paganella. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. We have met because you are on...
In Albuquerque,
New Mexico, where I love to hang out.
The city that never sleeps.
Yeah.
land of ancho chili and of people walking up to you at the gym and asking you, hey, man, you here filming? Yeah, I am. You don't have a car here, do you? No. Why? Because mine's been stolen twice. Like, that was everyone's story.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
You don't have a car here, do you? No. Do you have a rental? Did they give you a rent? No. Okay, good. Because I had mine stolen. You know, I mean, like, that's all.
Yeah, again and again you heard this?
Like, every day.
Wow.
Random people just trying to... like implore me not to ever get a car there because they'll steal it and drive it across the border.
Or trying to get rides home from you.
Yeah.
That's a real roundabout way of asking for a ride.
So,
it's a post-Walter White society down there.
Would you give me a ride to Santa Fe? I don't know.
Do you need a ride somewhere? Because
is that what this is? Because I can call you an Uber.
we could carpool. Which way are you headed?
But no, it was exciting because you were there and you have a small part in Daybreak, which comes out in a few weeks.
We love that.
Yeah, which I wrote on and we'll keep talking about.
The initial reviews of people who have watched it, they're saying some really impressive things about the show.
Yeah.
They're saying words like groundbreaking. Mm,
the word groundbreaking.
The word groundbreaking has been used.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
And I won't spoil anything, but he plays a character's dad. And I wrote one scene that you were in.
And it was funny.
And I was on set
was
that
funny
day.
As hell.
And I got to watch you throwing a football.
Which I'm sure you were so bad at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
One thing I was interested to realize was that you trained in like theater at Carnegie Mellon.
I did.
And
were you good?
Was I good?
Yeah. College theater, I mean, particularly if you're going to be an actor, seems incredibly competitive to me.
Yeah.
Well, it was competitive to get in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think my year, I was one of 17 actors admitted, and I think there were like 1,000
yeah,
that
I
tried
bet.
Out mm-hmm. or something. You know, it's pretty hardcore to get
Carnegie
into that school.
Mellon, no joke.
And then at the time when I was there, they used to cut people.
Right.
That.
And so
I tried out for DePaul Theater. I was very afraid of that. Yes.
Yeah. So they cut 7 my first year and 7 the second year.
Okay.
So they, it was the attrition rate was wow. was pretty high. But they were trying to prepare you for the business, a very difficult business, and that most of you won't work. If you're not doing professional work, we're not going to give you an A. So the freshman and sophomore years, no one was allowed to get an A. No one was allowed to hear clapping.
Wow.
For you.
How
like, they, some people start clapping. Stop it, stop it.
Yeah.
Don't you clap at that. You know, or
wow.
don't give them a hug. You know, stuff like that.
Did you go to a
Which
Forest
helps
Line
go.
High School?
Yeah.
It was tough. You walked wrong. You talked wrong. You know, it was hardcore. It was really hardcore. They would tell people things about, you know, physicality.
Yeah.
Like, they'd tell the girls you need to lose weight. They tell the guys you need to lose weight.
Are you sure you weren't just kidnapped?
They would blindfold you.
Right.
Yeah,
they would beat you.
They called you Tanya. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since you left that, you know, you've had these roles, you know, like Alcide, you know, and
Big Dick Richie.
Yeah, Big Dick Richie. Mm-hmm. Like, do you miss reading Shakespeare or reading like George Bernard Shaw?
Yeah, completely. Sure, of course. But then I'll just go do a play. Like, I haven't done a play in a few years, but like the last one I did Streetcar at Yale, Yale Rep a few years back, which was
Stanley Energy here. Yeah. I mean, not in a good way.
Like, I'm gonna beat you and yes, rape your sister or something.
Yeah.
Yes,
I was gonna say without those elements.
Yeah, no.
Can't do Tennessee Williams anymore. Not in this culture.
Not in this climate, baby. Not nowadays.
And that was so. You know, I get to do plays every once in a while, and but here's the thing. Like, you know, you mentioned True Blood and Alcide, and that's Alan Ball. Like Alan Ball,
of course.
To me, I mean, I told him this. I said,
genius.
You would be Tennessee Williams back in the day,
like
or Tennessee Williams would be writing the show,
right?
Yeah,
True Blood would be like if Tennessee Williams was in today's world, he would make True Blood for, for sure. So, so there's that. So you're getting to work with the people I think that would have been, you know, those types of playwrights back in the day had, you know, TV and streaming and long form narrative not be what it is today, and getting to work on a couple films with Soderbergh and Greg Jacobs and company. I mean, look, you're working with the best storyteller. Sam Raimi, he's another one. So,
yes,
you know,
you worked with Sam on. I was reminded of this scene the other day, which is hilarious because I love Spider-Man and have a Spider-Man tattoo. But you play Flash Thompson.
Yes, you
in
do.
In the first movie. We were just talking about those movies before you got in, too.
I was saying that's my favorite superhero movie because it's fun. It, also, it gets at the stakes are incredibly high, like, and it just seems to nail. We were discussing Joker, and they're saying, like, I miss when they were a little bit more fun.
And there's a performance by Macy Gray in that movie.
Of course.
Yes.
And the Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Yeah. It had everything, really.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about that Spider-Man, as opposed to the new ones, and, I mean, they're just...
Different.
Just different. But in that one, Spider-Man was the only one. He was the only superhero in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That just didn't exist. And where the new ones, which I think was an interesting take from John Watts and company, was that he's not. He's a teenager who grew up in high school in the time of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So you're turning on the TV, seeing Captain America. All the kids know who they are. They're all wearing their T-shirts. They're all they all idolize them. And then you wind up becoming one of them, which I thought was a really cool alternate take.
I do like the Spider-Man movies in the new Marvel of it all.
They're
I do
great.
Like the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds you of that feeling of reading older comic books where, you know, like they would interact before they became so much now. Like 500 comics that you have to read a month. But I like that idea. But there's also something to be said about the fact that you have this one superhero and it really just trades on that classic hero story. But we're in a different era. No, I don't know.
But speaking of nerd lore, you are associated with Dungeons & Dragons in a way that I did not understand about you until reading this brief. So I would like you to justify it, because I have one main question about Dungeons & Dragons. Are you ready for it?
Okay.
Is it possible to be bad at it?
To be bad at Dungeons & Dragons?
Because, like, is there anybody who's like, oh, I play Dungeons & Dragons, but I've been in gnome jail for 6 years?
I was very bad at Dungeons & Dragons the time I tried to play.
Really?
Yeah, you can be bad at it.
You can be.
Sure.
Okay, oh, it's not just like a social situation.
No.
I'm deeply, deeply removed.
You can be bad at any game.
When we were growing up, it's a game. It's a game with rules.
Yeah,
and you
can
get better at those rules.
Yeah.
And you can actually go home and study and get better at it by yourself. Like, you can crack the books and figure out how to get better at playing your character. So I think in today's world with streaming, there's been such an emphasis put on, like, I've got a funny voice.
Yeah.
I'm a little gnome who's going to cast this. And it's like, shut the F up.
That is actually a very beautiful voice. You know,
we love what you did.
Oh, you can swear as much
but
as you want.
But people at home think, oh, well, I'm not an actor. It's like, who cares? It's a game.
Yeah.
Go play
the
game and have fun. And you don't have to do any of that. That's, you know, I mean, but yes, it is also a game. And it's one thing where... Like, so I run a game at my house, and it's for a lot of people who used to play when they were younger, who haven't played, who took like a 20-year hiatus, and they're coming back to it. And all of them are afraid. They're nervous. They're like, oh, man, well, you know, I don't remember how to play, and I don't want to hold you guys back. And it's like, no, it's okay. Like, we, you know, nobody eats their own at the table. Everybody's trying to help everybody else out and look, you know, pointing at their character sheet. Okay, that's the number you need, or add that one in, or everybody just helps out, and you wind up just getting it pretty quickly.
Got it.
You get back in. But yeah, you can be bad. There are people who are bad, who have played like countless hours, and it's just like, dude, you roll that same die. You roll that thing every single time. Just come on, man. Help me out. Help us out.
I was much better at this like Star Wars RPG game that I played.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Dungeons & Dragons, no, but Star Wars. Although,
if you're good at that, you could figure out D&D.
Plus, I feel like it's more in now. I mean, there was a whole big D&D inspired plotline on Riverdale this past season, which I was very excited by.
Mm-hmm.
It's called they were playing a game called Griffins and Gargoyles.
I remember that.
Then people start killing each other for the Gargoyle King.
Oh no.
But he's not really a gargoyle.
Just like Satan.
Yeah.
Like everyone in the '80s was murdering for Satan. Or, well, actually they weren't, but people kids got put in jail
they
for it.
They thought they were. They said they were.
Can't kill people for Satan anymore in this climate.
No.
Not
anymore.
Not nowadays.
Not according to Netflix.
No.
They will, we were talking before we got on the mic that, I just did this Netflix movie out in Boston. And
Sleepover.
Sleepover, yeah. And when I landed, they were like, oh, so you have to have your... like safety briefing, or the way they explained it, I was like, what? And it was a representative or somebody from Netflix Legal for about 40 minutes straight without taking a breath and without me saying anything. You know, just unprompted, just went into everything you can and cannot do in today's world, which is like, if someone has a nickname, you're not allowed to call them by their nickname, because even though they don't find it offensive, someone else around them might find it offensive, and you're like... So what, of course, do we all do as soon as we get the set is make nicknames for each other.
Yeah,
of course. Like, we're doing exactly what they're telling us not to.
That seems very intimidating. Like, here's a list of things that will definitely ruin things for you.
Listen, when we started writing on Daybreak, a Linda came into the room. Her name was actually Linda. She was from HR. she was black, though, not white. Mm. And
progress.
Right? And she gave us, you know, like this... whole spiel, you know, it was like, we're your friend. HR is your friend. And, you
oh,
know,
really?
Like,
I don't buy that.
HR is the company's friend.
Yeah,
but
sure.
That's like some,
We knew that because then when we'd be on the Netflix campus and you'd see Linda, you'd be like, hey, Linda. She would look at you like,
who the hell are you? I'm not your friend. I'm trying to get to lunch.
Don't touch me.
Yeah, no.
Trying to inject you with this microchip so we know where you are at all times. Yeah, no, I mean, but, you know, the thing that was just kept going through my head was, like, I was on True Blood.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like, give us the sexual harassment spiel. Come on, give it to us. We're on a show about necrophilia and bestiality. It's about corpses fucking people. Like,
True
come on
Blood
now.
Set, like...
It was insane, dude. It was I mean, it was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bunch of very... serious actors who took their craft very seriously. A lot of heavyweight stage actors. A lot of people from Carnegie Mellon, Juilliard, A lot of really serious, you know, European actors not taking the show too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, I remember, God, I mean, it should remain nameless, but I remember being on a sitcom doing an episode during that the run of True Blood where they were having a moment and they got these huge ratings. And I was talking to the star of the show and I was like, hey, congrats on the ratings, man. That's incredible. And the star's response was, well, you know, it's really about the craft for me. And
Can people not hear themselves? that is the cliche of cliches coming from an
actor.
I'm
like, dude, this show is ridiculous. Yeah. First of all, like your craft. Like, meanwhile, on True Blood, like I'm working with, like, I just, you know, I was in a plot line with Dennis O'Hare, like two-time Tony winner Dennis O'Hare, who's like one of the greatest American treasure actors ever. Mm-hmm. And all we're talking about, we're fucking around talking about ratings. You know, yeah. I'm like, oh, did you see the ratings for something? Oh, great. You know, like, how much money did you make at that convention? Oh, sweet. You know, that's our conversation, meanwhile. So there's a bit of it. What was beautiful about it was that everybody was just so good and the material was so good and the material was so much fun that we just had a blast. But there were a lot of those talks about, like, yeah, you turn a corner and someone's having a very in-depth conversation about bestiality because it's like the werewolves are now showing up on the show and we need to figure out if when a female werewolf who is pregnant shifts, does the fetus also shift just in theory?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're trying to figure all that stuff out, which was kind of ridiculous.
Stevie Nicks has a solo album about that.
Yeah, anyway. People need to revisit True Blood.
They do.
You're talking about, like, real New York stage actors. Like, some of the best performance. Like, Dennis O'Hare in that one monologue he has to camera at the end of, I think, season...
The newscaster's
chair. Season three. Yeah. I think season three is my favorite season.
Oh, well, so, I appreciate that.
And by the end of it, that's the stakes are so fucking high. Also, shout out to Rutina Wesley, who fucking never really got the credit and slayed that show up and down. Like,
oh, they gave her, I mean, she was crying for three seasons straight.
She's incredible.
Yeah. Everybody was covered in blood. Someone was dead. I mean, I have to give a shout out to the late Nelson Ellis, who was on another level.
Yeah.
He wasn't an actor. He was a channeler. He was a vessel. When you were in a scene with him, it was like he disappeared and something else entered him.
Truly great.
He was amazing.
And a great creation.
You had Fiona Shaw walking around being a witch.
Miss Fiona Shaw.
Thank God she's having like an extreme moment now.
For sure.
That's very
for
exciting.
Sure. It's really fun to see.
Yeah, I agree. People should revisit. I'm going to revisit.
You must. I actually discovered it. I was on a lot of Vicodin. I had my wisdom teeth removed. And this is a great way to get into True Blood.
Yeah,
is
right.
If you just
you're
got
immediately
your wisdom
immersed.
Teeth couch bound.
Takes a little bit of the edge off.
Takes a little, and honestly, you ease right in.
Yeah. That first episode's hardcore.
It is hardcore.
Like, I remember watching the first episode, and I can take a lot, and I like crazy, weird, man, that first episode, I remember just sitting there in the dark after they was over. I didn't know what to think.
It is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It is a lot. I remember my dad would come in, and he'd check on me in my, like, drug-induced, like, wisdom teeth removal state, and it would always be an intense sex scene. He's like, are you watching porn? Like, I understand you're on another planet high, but just tell me if you're watching porn. I'm like, I promise it's like a really good drama on New York stage actors.
It's not porn, it's HBO.
Yeah.
There it is.
Do you get recognized more from True Blood or Magic Mike now?
Probably Magic Mike at this stage in the game. But like, I just came from New York Comic Con, and that's a True Blood audience.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? But when I'm on the streets, it's usually Magic Mike.
Mm. The streets of LA.
Or
Albuquerque.
Or Albuquerque. Streets of Albuquerque. Yeah. It's like Big Dick Richie.
Are there any life skills you learned in Magic Mike that you still apply in life?
Are you asking me if I like practice my dance moves on my wife? Over?
I don't know. There's a voguing sequence in one of the movies.
Oh, there is. Yeah. When are you going to be up on a stage with a thousand screaming women.
Yes.
Screaming to the point where your ears hurt for the next 2 days. Like, deafening. And then, like, you do some move and it goes even louder. Yeah. It's like, it's a drug. Like, I totally understand why those guys keep doing that. Like, I directed this documentary in between the Magic Mikes about this, the oldest, longest running male strip club in Dallas, Texas called Le Bear. Mm. And namely, this guy named Randy the Master Blaster, who was at the time a 55-year-old male stripper who had been stripping there consecutively since 1979.
Wow.
And he's now since turned 60 and is still stripping there. Like, he's still going. And you understand why somebody would want to keep doing that. Like, you know, you get, you're a god for those few minutes you're up on stage. And so, yeah, I mean, are there like life skills? I mean, I don't know. It's like, I met my wife during that time. So,
oh, yeah.
Maybe I was, you know, there something was working.
Yeah.
She's pretty rad.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. So, but I really do think that, I think there's a certain amount of confidence that you get. You also, like, I think you understand the male-female dynamic from a perspective that I could have lived my entire life. People would live their entire life and not really understand. One of my castmates, I won't say which one, but I found him after he did a routine. It was awesome. I ran backstage to give him a high five, and I found him with his head in his hands, like huddled, like taking up the least amount of space possible, sitting on like an apple box, like with his head in his hands.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, dude, are you all right? And he looks up and says, "She licked my balls." And I went, "What? She licked my balls." I was like, "Oh my God."
Rabid.
So then someone else ran back and they're like, "Hey man, that girl, she went back to her table with the other extras. And she was high-fiving. I guess she's a lesbian. And she was high-fiving people saying, my mom would be so proud of me right now."
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
What a triumph for her, that paid extra who was at work. What a personal triumph.
Will that hold up in court? My mom would have loved it.
Yeah, well, honestly, if her mom's the judge. Yeah. I actually am proud of her. Court is adjourned.
Yeah.
That is the plot of the All Rise pilot. Right?
Yes. Go, go clean up your room.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but there was this question also, too, that I got a lot on Press Tour for Magic Mike, which was, you know, do you feel objectified? Mm. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, well, are you upset about it? I'm like,
hell no.
No. No guy cares like why you like them as long as you like them. What do you think? Like, I rolled out of bed in this kind of shape? Like, this takes work.
It looked empowering.
Man, yeah. You know, like, come on now.
Before I leave the gym, I ask everybody around me, am I jacked yet? Please tell me. You have to fill out a card.
Would you give me a dollar bill?
Yeah.
How about a $5?
Yeah. Or a ride home. Yeah.
In Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Would you give me a ride home?
Because my car keeps getting stolen.
Yeah.
Before you go, talking about that gym, what would you tell Keep It listeners one thing that they should do for the Joe Manganiello look?
For the Joe Manganiello look?
Yeah, like, if they're just like in the gym, not Equinox, because we've all canceled, allegedly. what's something they should do?
They should read my book. Mm. I wrote a book a few years ago called Evolution, and it's the mind. Mm. The mind is the reason why people don't achieve their goals, whether that's in life or in the gym. Mm. I can teach you how to do curls with proper form in about 30 seconds, but that doesn't mean that you're going to stick with it. And so it's just, I always say to people, you know how to swim? Get wet. You know how to write a book? Sit in a chair. Mm-hmm. You know how to get in great shape? Put your gym shoes on. Mm-hmm. You put the shoes on, you'll go.
Like, yes.
You know, but nobody's going to make the time for you. You got to put the shoes on. You got to go.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I put the shoes on and I stay at home and my trainer texts me, "You are late." And then I go.
And also, abs are made in the kitchen.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Well, we know Lewis loves a list.
It's all I love, arguably. Do you remember the VH1 show The List? I miss that so much, where four people would just sit around and pick their three favorites of something, and then the audience would say, we agree or we disagree.
Do you remember A-List?
Dallas and New York.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That came up recently for some reason. Why? Oh, I always want to bring up Ryken Lemkul, who was one of the gay guys on that, who used to date Lance Bass.
Oh, yeah.
He looks so much like Powdered Toast Man from Ren and Stimpy, and I wish more people would appreciate both references.
He has had so many iterations, by the way, in just like reality TV, because we were first introduced to Ryken on The Amazing Race with his man who he left for Lance Bass.
Mm-hmm.
He's also an actor in the series Dante's Cove.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes. I think we all at this table remember Dante's Cove
from
being great material for us all in our younger years.
Just like True Blood, it was full of great acting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I remember Dante's Cove mostly as like a DVD you would get at a LGBTQ fundraiser in 2009.
Yep.
These are the lives I've lived in LA.
Yep. That and Eating Out 2, but never won.
Right.
You can't find it. But yeah. Eating Out 2, mass marketed.
It's like Street Fighter, the original game. It starts with 2.
It's like Star Booty.
Yeah.
Mm. Pete Buttigieg's favorite Eating Out is none of them.
Pete Buttigieg doesn't know he has a butthole.
But we're
I'm kidding. Do not at me.
I think it's an emoji, actually.
Yeah. It's a memoji.
But we're talking about lists because this week, on Monday and Tuesday, Pitchfork released articles listing the top 200 songs of the decade and the top 200 albums.
And the albums list just came out, so I have not seen that list.
Yes,
but the singles
one. I'm going to give you a little sneak preview.
Oh, okay.
A little taste. Ooh. Okay? A little flavor in your ear.
Okay.
A flea in your ear. Fade out.
I know the reference. Go on.
I can just keep going.
All right.
At number one of the songs was Kendrick Lamar's All Right.
Which I would say about that, by the way, is also the best award show performance of the decade at the BET Awards, I think, in 2015. I mean, talk about... You thought things were going to change in music. I mean, just it's a crazy, super powerful performance. He's such an amazing live performer.
Mm. It was followed by Grimes's Oblivion.
That's a very interesting choice.
That's a bizarre, out of left field.
I like
we're
that
being
song,
artsy about this choice.
Well, it is Pitchfork, right?
Yeah.
I do like that song a lot, specifically because it is a song about her post-sexual assault.
Mm.
And the video, I love. It's her just like dancing in traditionally masculine spaces. I think that the video and song are very strong. Not really Grimes' best album, but anyway.
My 2012 emerging Canadian chanteuse will always be Carly Rae. So take that, Grimes.
Absolutely.
Well, and then it was followed by Robin's Dancing on My Own, Beyonce's Formation, and Frank Ocean's Thinking About You in fifth.
I like that they're in the top five. I would even go that those are 1, 2, 3. For me, anyway, I am quite a faggot. So it's like, of course, Dancing on My Own is going to be number one. But like, there was a moment where I saw Robin's concert at the Barclays Center like a couple months ago, and she played Dancing on My Own, and it was just this communal, just like primal scream of like joy. I can't even describe it. It was just like everyone knew we were listening to the song that like defined our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing on My Own, I feel, is just. But I'm a 10 out of 10 on McKinsey scale.
No, here's my problem with that song, especially coming from a pop diva place.
Sure.
I think the only gay person who's sort of not super on board with that song. The protagonist is too much of a loser.
She's sad, Lewis.
Dancing on Your Own is not cool.
She has all the human emotions, Lewis. She's sad.
It's like, grow up.
She doesn't want to be dancing on her own.
I'm
she wants
sorry.
To be dancing with her lover who's over there in the corner. She's watching you kiss her.
Your fave, Karen Carpenter, got depressed by Monday.
Yeah, truly.
Okay.
But she watches the birds and she's weeping.
But she admits it. She's not like, isn't it cool that I'm over here and I'm dancing by myself?
I don't think Robin thinks it's cool. I don't think that's her POV.
Karen Carpenter's like, touch me when we're dancing, please. It's like, bitch, that's how you dance.
Wow, it's so true. She is.
I can't believe.
Leave Robin alone.
Yeah, truly.
Also, to me, unfortunately,
the best of Robin to me is always her first two singles, the ones from the 90s. Because that's actual like pop.
Show
I like
me
pop
love.
That sounds Max Martin. No, and the even better one, Do You Know What It Takes? I love that song. Mm. Both went to number six.
For me, wow. I'm going to say Dancing on My Own is her apex.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would
say. I've always preferred Dancing on My Own to Call Your Girlfriend.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Call Your Girlfriend's amazing, but I almost like Hang With Me more than that song. Mm, like,
yes.
I love that song. I love
You Should
Cry
know.
When You Get yeah. Older, I love.
Time like, Machine.
Yeah, there's so much good
shit. Bops. And
the new album.
I would say Honey, I like.
Honey's great.
Yeah. They didn't have a lot of newer things really on there, except on albums, Lana Del Rey's Norman Fucking Rockwell makes the top 10.
Oh, how interesting.
That is so premature.
Right. So here are the top 10.
But they have to make those judgments sometimes on a list like
For
this.
For sure.
Here are the albums. Again. Number one is Frank Ocean's Blonde.
Okay.
Two is Kanye, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
I thought that was going to be number one.
Which I thought would be number one. I wholeheartedly agree. I think that that was a defining album of this decade.
It has my favorite Nicki rap on it.
For sure.
Yeah. Has her record label's favorite rap on it, too. Three is Beyonce self-titled.
Oh, they go self-titled and not Lemonade.
I also would.
I would agree. Because
and further down on the list, they have my favorite Beyonce album, Four,
before for sure.
Lemonade.
Yes. But they rank all of those albums.
Those three make the top 200 albums of the 2010s.
I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's weird is they're very appreciative of Beyonce in this respect, but not of Taylor. Her only album on this is Red, which I feel like the, you know, sort of like we're being like hipster, artistic, liking music people. They love a Carly. They don't like 1989, which I'd argue deserved to be on this list.
I mean, 1989, Lewis and I have discussed this. I believe that 1989 is her best album.
It is.
Yes.
And I appreciate everyone's love of Red. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy we're past the moment where we can pretend that Lover is her quote-unquote best since Red. It is not. We can kind of now, with a few weeks, months even, we can see that Lover is fine.
Red has so many highs, but its lows are so skippable.
It is tonally inconsistent. And I also think that's part of the narrative. It's because it's a transitional album, but I think that in order to call something one of the best albums of all time, it would have to be a little bit more tonally consistent than Red
is. Not Everything for Everyone. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Whereas, 1989 is very streamlined.
Absolutely.
Other than the Shake It Off being the lead single, which has nothing to do with the rest of the album.
I get why it is, though.
Yeah.
Even the weaker songs on 1989, like the ones like I Know Places, like I'm appreciative of her risk that she takes there. Whereas like on Lover, I'm like, you need to cut five of these.
Yeah.
The downside of 1989 not being on the top 100 is that I think that Blank Space is her best song.
Without question.
I would say Out of the Woods.
I'm a Wildest Dreams queen.
All Too Well. And I'm like, Blank Space should be in the top.
For me, All Too Well is like getting this bloated reputation. It's overlong. I get that it's a journey, but like, it's epic for epic's sake. And
we get that you pulled out your guitar, Allie, but also like,
the Allie.
Start singing about jeans, okay?
Yeah.
The fourth album is Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth is, I wholeheartedly agree with five. It is Fiona Apple's The Elder Wheel is Wiser Than the Driver of the Screw, and Whipping Cords Will Serve You More Than Rotes Will Ever Do.
Honey.
What she had to do. What the other girls should have did.
Can I tell you something?
That's the full title.
I own Tidal and When the Pond. Fiona Apple is actually a blind spot for me, and that is extremely my world.
It is.
Anybody I'm who's shocked. The second stage at Lilith Fair, that's my entire world.
Yeah. I'm shocked that Fiona's not your girl.
Yeah.
I like that she had a little...
The Extraordinary Machine thing I enjoyed,
Her spat with Lil Nas X.
Right.
Briefly. Cute little guy. And now they're friends and gonna record something together.
Oh, God. Not everyone needs to record something after they make up. I don't think we need Fiona Apple and Lil Nas X together. They can keep that. in the voice of your podcast.
Well, she also had the renaissance in Hustlers, obviously.
Yeah.
When,
I love that narrative. Now, she and J-Lo bridged the gap.
I would like a Fiona J-Lo collabo.
Come on now.
Would you?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay, bring out Fiona Shakira, at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Shakira's canceled at the Super Bowl. Instead, it's Fiona and J-Lo.
Her performance of This World is Bullshit is going to bring down the house.
Six is A Seat at the Table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is that, I guess that's the album Solange. I would pick by her. Yeah.
Yes. Well, yeah, because I think that the latest Solange album was a scam.
Wait, we're saying that A Seat at the Table is one of the top 200 best albums of the past 10 years? That's
yeah,
what we're saying?
Six. It's at number six.
We're saying it's number six.
Mm. I like
Let
that
album. Let it marinate.
A lot.
I know.
Does that EP count? I would pick True.
Oh, True is very good.
Yeah.
Seven is Vampire Weekend, Modern Vampires of the City.
Interesting. Well, we are friends with him now. So.
Yes.
I love it. No, I mean, it's great.
I actually would argue that I think, and I've told Ezra this, that I think Father of the Bride is their best album. But that's also the album after Rostam left. So it depends on how you view Vampire Weekend and when you came to them.
How
if
you
you're
take
like,
it.
If you're going to be like, oh, this is their new era. And I think that you will have to, time will have to pass for people to appreciate that, oh, this is a different Vampire Weekend, but we love it.
Yeah.
But this one's fine. It's a very good album.
I would say, I feel like an albums list, we would all agree, our individual choices would sound something like this. We would agree with critical consensuses. But in terms of singles or songs for the 2010s, would yours also run way more pop?
Mine would be
of
much
course.
More
Mine's
mainstream
all about explosive singles.
Yeah, absolutely.
For albums, I need like singles. I need something like this Vampire Weekend, Solange. Like they'd be up there for me. Because for me to love an album now, especially in this post you know, having to go out and buy an album era. It's like, I need to be able to, at home, have an experience with an entire album for me to be like, oh,
it's
okay,
like a movie.
This feels worth it for an album. Some artists who we love create, like, amazing singles. But then they're just sort of thrown together on an album, and you're like, this doesn't make sense.
They have nothing to say.
It doesn't make sense outside of being shuffled on a Spotify playlist.
I will say, I think it's weird to me.
Robin's
anyway.
Eight, by the way. Body Talk.
Really? I love that. Yeah. I think it's weird to me on the singles list that Work is Rihanna's song that they chose, because I actually think on...
The goopery of that.
I don't think it's her strongest song on that album.
My number two.
I would say Desperado for me, and Kiss It Better, and I mean, even Close to You. I actually stand a Rihanna ballad.
No,
yeah.
Occasionally, I do. I mean, she's gotten so much better as a singer.
Oh, so
but
much
my,
better.
In the short list I created, my number two is by Rihanna, and it was What's My Name.
Oh, What's My Name is a bop.
Because
I fucking love One.
That
all
to me
time.
Is the transition point from big pop hook oriented Rihanna to big dick energy Rihanna.
Yeah, she was giving you
how about that?
Superstar. Yeah, that and that actually Loud to me is one of her strongest albums.
Lots of
Loud,
amazing
Loud
fucking album
is
that does
a
not get
monster.
The respect.
Yeah.
Skin.
Love it.
A song.
Love it. A song.
Yeah.
The word classic has been used.
I actually, speaking of modern classics, I love that Formation was number four on the list of top songs.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think that actually is Beyoncé's best song. And not just because of the song itself, the moment it created.
Yes, absolutely.
The dropping of the video coupled with that Super Bowl performance and the reaction to it, that is Beyoncé's forever moment,
a moment
in pop culture for me, more so than the Lemonade album in general.
I'm totally fine calling Formation the best video of the decade, too.
Absolutely.
On my personal top 10 list I made, the song I picked by Beyoncé was Blow, just because to me that has like a sort of Prince/disco vibe that I wish she would entertain a little bit more.
My favorite song off that album is Jealous. I think I love any song that really specific lyrically.
Like, I mean,
that presents like a specific situation that's like unique to her. You can't really cover it, and it's just like so. The production on it is gorgeous. The video is amazing.
When I think love of that. Matt Rogers, I think of I'm in your penthouse half naked.
I
energy.
Am.
Yeah,
and
that's you.
I cook this meal for you naked. And I would say something. We don't discuss in the song how the meal tastes, but I did cook it for you naked. I did cook it for
we
you
don't
naked.
Discuss whether or not it's actually from Postmates.
The words
but
actually
now
cook
we
have
said
been
it.
Used. Yeah, the word Postmates has been uttered.
You know who is not on the singles list at all, who gave my number one song of the decade? And this is technical because I think the song peaked on the charts in 2010, but it technically is from 2009. Can you guess who it is?
No, go ahead and tell me.
TikTok. That's my favorite song.
Oh, wow. I remember, this is an example of a song, and I think Carly Rae might have done this with Call Me Maybe. The first time I heard it, I said, what the fuck is this? The second time I heard it, I was like, this is the best song of all time.
Yeah.
It's like it's so, because it was so kind of embracing like low
right
class.
I am disgusting,
I'm gross,
and also funny.
Yeah,
you know, like every one of the lyrics isn't just I'm a mess, which is my least favorite brand of Twitter.
Yeah,
I can I can name all the gay Twitter people who are only imamess.tumblr.com.
We see you.
Yeah,
I'm a mess, I never leave my home.
Right. Yeah. Can I bring pizza to the club? Yeah, that bullshit.
Like this selfie horrible of me in a mirror.
Yeah. No. Oh, you're making fun of me?
No, I was talking about them.
Oh yeah.
Oh, someone's sensitive.
Wow.
No, I thought you were coming for me.
Sad Twitter does like, oh, here's a selfie of like me in a cardigan.
Oh,
in
yeah,
my
yeah,
home.
Yeah. Right.
They
yeah
usually don't take a photo in a fucking Radisson in Madison.
No, it was like in The Conversation. It was gritty.
You look like you were about to be murdered.
There are stakes to my sexuality.
You look like you were Matthew McConaughey about to be murdered in The Paperboy.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
Oh, wow. So did I. Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, back to TikTok.
Yeah.
So it's really funny. It's really... Also, by the way, so Teenage Dream isn't in the top 10, right?
Psycho.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
It's like a definitive pop single.
It's what actually made Katy Perry to me.
Yeah.
Because I've never been more positive that someone was going to be a one-hit wonder after hearing I Kissed a Girl. And then Hot and Cold, and especially thinking of you, I was like, okay, Katy's here. And then California Girls, it's like, mm-hmm, we're just... I love this song, but I get what we're doing. And then Teenage Dream was like, again, another moment where she was like, oh, wow, you might have some staying power.
Yes, I would actually argue that I would put Teenage Dream close to my number one song, mm-hmm, of the 2010s. Just defining. But that also just talks to how the people who made this list engage in music differently than...
Yeah.
Three
games. So, true. Can we get this kind of sample size here? Is it the Pitchfork's critics that are putting this together, or is it like, do they go to people?
Some people contributed it. You know, mm-hmm, like I know Hunter Harris wrote about Lemonade for the 2010.
We stan Hunter
album
in this house.
Yes.
She's freakishly young, which upsets me.
She's literally number one. Her Twitter, if you're not following at Hunter Y. Harris, you're not following at Hunter Y. Harris.
Also, by the way, on this list, are we not disturbed that Runaway With Me is the only Carly Rae song on it? It's like, don't be in denial.
Well, they put Emotion.
Call Me Maybe
very,
needs to be on the list.
I think
high up.
Yeah.
And I think that Pitchfork is just very much, they like that era of Carly.
Yeah.
You know, especially they also love probably that it didn't get the sales maybe that Carly
hoped
for.
Oh, yeah, that's V-Pitchfork.
You know, it's that.
I just think it's more okay for men to like that album because it's less bubblegum than her other material, which I say, hey, men, embrace bubblegum.
Of course, it's like 1989, though. You know, famously, Pitchfork didn't review 1989, but they reviewed that fucking cover album.
It's so crazy.
By the man, the man we will never discuss again because we stan Mandy Moore.
Yeah, we love you, Mandy. I would say, like, the thing with Carly, it just shocks me that after the huge success of her first album and the singles, and not just Call Me Maybe, that whole album was successful, that Runaway With Me was not a global hit.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's so strange. It's
even
me,
Cut
it's,
to the Feeling. It's like, how is this different from other pop songs that are doing extremely well?
It's so weird to me because it's not like you don't have a bankable name. I mean, you know, you liked her as a pop star the first album cycle. It's now here she is with better material. It's for me, it's two songs that I can't believe weren't global hits. Runaway With Me by Carly Rae Jepsen and Am I Alone Out Here? Thunder by Jessie J. To me, Thunder by Jessie J is a fucking stomper, F5 tornado, killer pop song.
You are alone there.
Why, bitch?
I like Jessie J. I don't know. I wish you would let Channing Tatum out of her dungeon so that he can make movies again.
I'm not talking about the woman behind the music. I'm talking about the music the woman created. Do you have vocabulary for Thunder? Do you know Thunder?
I know Thunder.
You don't stand?
Bitch, you always talk about Thunder. I like the song.
I love
it. I don't know.
Song.
I don't think it's...
You're
I don't
coming
think
out
it's
hard
on
for women who sometimes have a hard bang today.
And if it's not a hard bang, it's a full shaved head. It's a full, like, forget it, I don't know.
And being in Grease Live for 1 minute. Like,
but we stan her in Grease Live.
I would argue Domino.
Sure.
Massive.
I wouldn't stand in your way.
Massive. My last thing I feel like, which was included, K. Michelle's More Issues Than Value. I love that album. It's an R&B album that has stuck with me since it came out. And I think that, I don't know, she just deserves more respect in the industry.
Do you know what song is a little tiny little snack, which I can see sneaking on there just because Pitchfork maybe wanted to be cool and like throw her a bone, is Get the Fuck Out by Mariah.
I'm withholding a comment because my Keep It is related to Mariah. So we'll get into that.
Oh, I guess we'll get into it.
Well, then we'll go straight into Keep It.
Yeah.
After this break, though, you know, we gotta pay the bills. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It, you know, where we talk about what we don't like this week. And before we get into it, my first brief Keep It is to glasses.
Oh,
to not being able to see.
You have transformed.
I got LASIK now.
And then I got a sty, which is some like O. Henry-like reaction to you getting LASIK.
Well, yeah. Listen, truly. I had to make a deal. I had to make a pact.
I could see it.
Okay, with Judge Jeanine Pirro, she said, if you get LASIK, something has to happen to Lewis.
Yeah, it's a Harry Potter Voldemort situation. Yeah. One cannot live while the other survives.
Yeah, she's just stalking around your apartment, eyeing your sister. Oh,
God.
But no, my real Keep It, I will get into in a moment, because we will let Matt Rogers go first.
I, as the guest, go first?
Yes.
Okay, so I would say Keep It to... last Friday, I went to the Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Hollywood. My second favorite Universal Studios after that in Florida. And
don't love anything in Florida, but continue.
Keep it to all the Lupita Nyong'os trying to kill me in the Us maze. Okay, so you will go. You will find yourself in the Us maze, and Lupita Nyong'o herself will be coming at you with a pair of shears, a pair of scissors, a pair of cutters, and will be coming for your entire life. And if you think that she didn't take a swing at you with what feel to be very real scissors, they can keep it. And there's about 15 Lupitas in the maze. And if you want to be truly scared, you can go to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios because this is the production value is through the roof.
I was wondering about this because the commercials have horrifying. This black woman and a woman who looks like her chasing her because it's us. But I'm also like, there's no way that they can have duplicates of everyone who goes to see horror.
So I was disappointed that when I got there, my doppelganger wasn't in there.
That
I was
Lewis
really looking,
wasn't there trying to kill you?
Lewis in my silhouette, like trying to kill me.
You had to wait till you came here for me to try to kill you.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, wait for the parking lot, sweetie.
Surprise, Matt, you're dead.
Oh my God, I knew it the whole time.
Wow, so you're saying the shears looked really real.
They were, the production value that they put all the money that they put into their regular attractions, it seems, into these Halloween mazes. Like, it's a true fright. And then Stranger Things was more of like an art installation. It wasn't scary. It was kind of like, okay, cool, this is fun.
But like Winona Ryder's performance.
But the Us maze, that was terrifying. And that score is pumping through. It's crazy.
It sounds like it made more sense than the movie, though, which I still do not stand.
You don't stand the movie? I have to
tell
you.
What is it about?
I can't tell you I didn't see it because I'm too scared.
How about that?
I don't see any horror movies because I am too anxious, but I did it force people to go with me to Halloween Horror Nights. I don't know what that says. I think I'm more comfortable in a haunted house because I can run away. Uh-huh. In a movie theater, you're famously sitting.
That's true.
Still.
So you're moving through it at your own pace.
Yeah. So, you know, you can kind of like, I have my wits about me and my body, my very spry body. I can sort of like move around.
So you probably hate it, the Tower of Terror.
No, well, you know what? It's interesting. Even though you are sitting on that, I like it. I think it's theater.
Yeah. Anyway, Lewis, what is your Keep It?
My Keep It is to all celebrity memoirs that are not Mariah Carey's upcoming celebrity memoir, which she is officially writing. She's given updates on this before, but she has talked about how she's going to detail her many travails and her comeback a la Emancipation of Mimi.
Yes.
And let me just say, I want to hear it exactly from her lips.
Yep.
Because let me tell you right now, based on the lyrics we get from Mariah Carey, no book will have more adverbs.
I'm nonchalantly has been used.
Incessantly will be in the book.
The word incessantly will be used.
She is just, I've talked about this before, one of the few irreplaceable celebrities that you could not have made up. Now
Never.
She's morphed into the Elvira of Christmas, which is always exciting for her. In a way, I feel there's a certain class of gays who are maybe 5 years younger than I am who don't know the full story of how amazing she
because
was.
Because they missed 1995 to 2000, which was crucial. Right. Mariah Carey apex.
And as we saw in Drag Race.
As we saw.
Like the younger gays who like in that
when they
episode,
didn't know
who
Mariah
didn't
was.
Know Mariah anything.
Deeply
from the
humiliating.
90s.
Right. She's so funny. I think also in a weird way, the remnant of that time that is still around is the song Hero, which is her worst of her 18 number one hits. And by the way, everybody should be able to name all 18 of her number one hits.
If you can't, then, and honestly,
hold
in
on,
order.
I'm going to do it. I think I can do it in order.
Okay, starting with?
Okay, Vision of Love, Love Takes Time, Someday, I Don't Want to Cry. Talk about a song you never hear anymore.
I listen
Emotions,
to the
hold on.
Mariah album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Emotions, and then I'll be there?
Yeah, I'll be there, yeah. And then it's Dream Lover,
Hero,
Fantasy,
One Sweet Day,
I'll Always Be My Baby, mm-hmm. Honey, My All, Heartbreaker.
No, wait, did you? No, because Butterfly was number two. Never mind, that's not
Honey,
one of them.
My yeah. All, Heartbreaker, Thank God I Found You, We Belong Together, mm-hmm. Don't Forget About Us, Touch My Body.
I think you missed Shake It Off.
Nope, not number one.
That was not number one?
No, it wasn't.
That must have just missed.
Yeah.
I listened to the album Mariah Carey, basically almost every day. It's just like it's a good sort of like mood setter for me. So I hear like I Don't Want to Cry, Someday, Prisoner, Love Takes Time.
Yeah,
those are bops.
The music I think of all of our childhood.
If It's Over,
me,
I love.
Yeah. I think that to me is maybe one of my like favorite Mariah.
Butterfly to me will always be in my heart. I mean that has like really good B sides too, like songs that weren't singles, like Whenever You Call. I love the Whenever You Call that's just her, not
yes.
the one with Brian.
Yeah,
love. She sounds
Butterfly. Yes, that's the one.
I mean,
with
Butterfly
that has Baby Doll. It has Roof.
I mean,
the Roof.
July.
The Roof is the shit.
Underrated video. Yeah.
And also Breakdown. You have to stand. I mean,
and also the Queen of Remixes. Of course, we forget that she has sort of given us the universe of remixes as like art form.
And also really kind of was the impactful feature queen, because when she had Jay-Z on Heartbreaker, that was a moment and people weren't doing it as frequently before that. That was a watershed. She never gets the credit.
I will argue that I think that the divide between the younger gays is not just missing the 90s. It is knowing a Mariah before that TRL moment where she came out with the ice cream with Carson, and then she had her exhaustion moment. Because for us, that was a shift in the Mariah Carey that we knew.
You became worried.
And yes, you became worried. But the Mariah Carey that came after that with Emancipation was already now campy, wild Mariah. You were used to it. Mm-hmm. You had to get that. You had to have a Mariah in your mind who then shifted that day.
Right. Arguably, she shifted at the MTV Cribs, where she where she taught us that in order to give a tour of her home, she has to change outfits four times.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at late 90s Mariah, even when the music was good, she is cuckoo bananas. Yeah. I mean, Mariah was always cuckoo
bananas.
Funny,
but yes.
You know what I want to see?
What?
I want to see the gritty Joker, but about Mariah Carey.
Honestly, feed it to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let her rise up and inspire people to come to theaters and just sing.
Yeah. Also, I have to say, the Glitter album slaps.
It does.
I like the song Lover Boy.
And it deserves...
Amazing.
Isn't it finally streaming now?
No, I don't think it is.
Oh, I had to buy it on iTunes.
Yeah, because Glitter had like the moment.
Yeah.
Around Caution Era, they were like, bring back Glitter or whatever, the hashtag.
Yes. It started charting. Glitter.
Yeah, it started charting again, and she was very tickled by it. I'm like a huge Mariah fan, so I went to this like... She had like a thing, like a listening party in New York, or she was talking about the history of her career, and she was talking about how she's so happy to know that people like the album, because she just assumed that it was something she should be wholly embarrassed by. But she stands by the music, and the music is
I love it.
Great. I mean, I love Never Too Far.
Yes. DJ Saved My Life?
Yep, 100%.
Yes. Didn't Mean to Turn You On?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, come on.
Which is, of course, a cover.
Yeah. I don't know if she will get another new number one, but I would argue that the Lambs are crazy enough that one of her old songs could go number one.
But by the
at
way,
some point.
All I Want for Christmas Is You still has not hit number one. It goes to like number three every year.
Do you think it'll get there?
Yes.
I mean, it gets bigger every year.
Yeah,
I think that
she's a genius.
Can she release a remix?
She did
a new one. Like I don't know.
I would be
Lil
okay
Nas, let's get that number one, girl.
I'd be okay with the re-release of Oh Santa, which I thought was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway. My keep it is to Rihanna.
Oh, rough.
Rihanna, who is releasing new content. It's not an album.
Yeah.
It's a visual book whatever the fuck that is.
A visual book?
Highlights for
Go
children?
On.
A coffee table book.
Can you color it?
I just spent $150 on a book that is not coming with music. It is not coming with tour tickets. It is not coming with merch. It is a goddamn book.
Well, no one spent that money but you, bitch.
It's mostly sold out.
Wait, is it mostly pictures of Rihanna?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yes. It's the experience of having Rihanna in my living room.
Now, here's the problem with coffee table books. I can just Google image search you. So why do I need a book of you?
Because when you're at a party, you know, there's something about just like lounging through a book.
Okay.
You know.
I socialize at parties, but that might be just me.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, well,
we've all been hoping you would stop that.
Well, you know, some of us come from the theater.
Of course.
So, you know, when I'm at a party, you know, you really need to run your fingers across a tabletop.
100%.
You need to sit down.
Did you just say theater is about touching a book?
Yes. You know, you need to be active, you know, like
famously,
active in the background.
You should
know,
be just wheeled out of the room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thespians, you know, the thing about them is they touch books.
Well, you know what? When I was Amanda in Glass Menagerie,
uh-huh,
I touched all those figurines. I touched all those books.
When I was Amanda.
I actually
and the
do
drama
appreciate...
desk loved me.
I do appreciate that she is doing something in the vein of, I'll say, Madonna's sex book. Because that's an era of celebrity I miss. Like, I'm putting out this wild release, and there's a party with S&M at it or mm-hmm. something, you know. So I appreciate that.
I love Rihanna's commitment to being our Madonna.
Yeah.
She is.
And her commitment to doing anything but releasing an album.
We'll get it, and it will be fabulous.
It will be.
I believe we'll get it by the end of the year.
She will drop that shit.
Whenever the
U2 style to our iTunes, our iPhones, December 31st.
That does feel a little bit like
11:59 p.m.
It does feel a little bit like being a 2012 apocalypse believer. Like, I do think we are going to get it by the end of this year.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our show. Thank you to Joe Manganiello.
Thank you.
For letting us objectify him.
Well, we actually were pretty good. We were.
Thank you, and continue his side eye to Matt Rogers.
What,
you
bitch?
You can hear him on Las Culturistas.
You could.
Why would you, though? It comes out the same day as Keep It.
He's been
we're
twice
competing
on the show.
On the charts?
I don't think we compete.
We're not.
I think they call us a comedy podcast, and they call you guys a, what, society
and
culture?
We were society and culture. We were moved to comedy this week.
Were you?
Last week, yeah.
Ugh, I hate when my talent takes over. It sucks.
On this, the episode I guessed on?
No, last week.
No, now we've been moved back to drama.
Yes.
That's our show. Thank you so much.
We'll see you next week. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seguin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So... No, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.